And it was difficult because everybody had their own interests, and it mm-hmm. wasn't obvious what yeah. you know the best solution was. And it would have been better to have had a more administrative, top-down mm-hmm. structure to work through, you know, the issues.
But yeah,
we didn't have it, so
so you had to work backwards and forwards. Yeah, that's complicated. How do you spell your last name, Gretel?
It's D-E-N-T-I-N-E.
T-I-N-E, okay. What was your position at Cal's? You were a professor and then a dean?
I was a professor, and then I was the associate dean for research. And I was also the director of the Wisconsin Agricultural Experiment Station, which is a federal role that has to do with our being the main grant college.
Okay. What did you research? I'm curious.
My research was in the area of cattle genetics.
And I
did a lot of work using new molecular data to incorporate it with the statistical analysis that had been done in the past to select the best genetics.
I always thought you did plant things because of how beautiful your garden is. That's really nice.
No, but I was a geneticist.
But you were a geneticist, that's true, which has a lot to do with what happens in the garden.
Yeah.
I've been starting the interviews mostly because I've been talking with people who gardened in times when I haven't seen the garden, but I like this way of asking, because I want to get a sense of what the garden or gardens mean to each person. So how do you see the garden or gardens? Or
Why describe it garden?
As a place, and why do you garden, and what is it there?
So the gardens to me are partly for food, because I like having control of my own food and how it's grown, mm-hmm. and also the freshness. Mm-hmm. It's partly a very good place to be centered in nature and to do physical labor that's... Mm-hmm. Good exercise, and I also walk to the garden, so there's the exercise of walking. Mm-hmm. And it's also a community of people mm-hmm. it's enjoyable to work with them in a way that seems like it's in harmony with nature. And
mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm. So when did you start gardening out there?
Out there, I think it was in 2004.
You had gardens before that?
I had had gardens before that, although when I was a professor, I had very little time.
So there
was some years when I did not garden. But mm-hmm. I started gardening in mm-hmm. 1967 mm. at the campus garden at UC Santa Cruz.
Oh, okay.
And they were just starting up their gardens then, and I worked in what was more like an F.H. King type operation.
Uh-huh.
It was a single campus garden that provided produce and flowers.
Okay, and that was just starting up in 67. So it wasn't really a community garden, but more of a student-run
it was,
cooperative.
Yeah, there was a gardener hired by the university, mm-hmm. a master gardener, mm-hmm. who employed lots and lots of student volunteers.
Nice.
And I worked with Alan Chadwick, and I worked with Alan Chadwick for some years after I graduated, as a volunteer.
Yeah.
But I had my own garden after I graduated.
Nice. So do you feel that the garden has changed since you've been here? It's only been five years? Then have you noticed shifts?
The gardens are different.
Mm-hmm.
And I think each year is different, mm-hmm. partly because of the way that the garden committee functions or doesn't function, and we have a regular turnover of staff positions as well, and the philosophy is pretty consistent, but the intensity with which there's some central organization changes. So when I first started, the central organization was extremely...
I mean, the garden committee.
The garden committee and the oversight and
mm-hmm.
physical attention to the gardens mm-hmm. was very loose, and mm-hmm. that the plots varied a lot more, and there were fewer communal things that went on.
Mm-hmm.
And it was more just renting out space.
Mm.
But I think it's had its ups and downs, but I think now it seems to me like there's more energy put into trying to make it a good experience for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And there's more expectation that certain things will be taken care of, like the mowing and the tools will be available. And so which, in the past, although there were garden rules, they weren't paid attention to very much. And so it was more individual gardeners and less of a community.
So when the garden rules that weren't paid attention to, what were some of them that just...
Things like keeping the communal tools in your plot.
Okay.
Gardening within your plot instead of going outside the boundaries.
Did that happen? So what, how did people then complain that somebody was gardening in their plot?
Yeah, like, or they just garden into the paths, or they garden in the tree islands, or
people had plots.
They just moved
plant things
that
into the
direction, you know? and then the weed pile was really a horrible mess. With garbage and woody debris and lumber, and it was very hard to manage, as well as it didn't compost well because of the way it was set up.
And
so there was just it was more difficult to garden and more difficult to deal with kind of your neighbors, because there wasn't really a consistent way of And I think that's one thing that has changed, is that the gardens look better, the Garden Oversight Committee is much happier, that the gardens actually seem to be functioning and taking care of their own disputes and problems, and and that there is some organizational structure to solve problems when they come.
When did you start going to garden committee meetings? And why?
3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
I think some issues came up that I had particular interest in. And I'd been to a work day, and they had said, you know, there's this garden committee, and you're always welcome to come, and so I thought I'd go check it out. And initially, I was probably only coming to about half the meetings, not nearly as regularly as I did after a while.
Did you start going more regularly because you wanted to take an active role in the garden, or did you just,
Right. Okay. I could see that, you know, that there were important decisions that got made at garden meetings and that I wanted to have input into, but also because I was more invested in the gardens and wanted to be helpful.
And I know this has changed since you've become registrar, but who do you feel like you interacted with when you're at the gardens before you were registrar? Like, what sort of community was there?
Well,
you know,
I knew my neighbors, you know, pretty much around, you know, in all directions, across the aisle and all. And I some of them were there all the time, at the same time as I was there, and some of them I only saw once in a while. but, you know, I enjoyed them, and then I also, because I go early in the morning, I knew a group of the early morning gardeners, and we would wait and exchange produce and plants and seeds.
That's what happens, I know that's what happens. but what, do you feel as though there are people... Do you feel as though there are multiple communities in the garden? And that may be a leading question. I don't mean it to be. But do you feel as though people have different expectations? And
I think there are different types of gardeners.
Okay.
I think there are multiple communities. And that language problem is part of this. So I do notice that there are Asian communities, which I'm assuming are Chinese. Because I know a few of them are Chinese. But they... you know, they go around, they actually make a circuit in the morning with a group of 4 or 5 of them going to various plots and talking and, you know, again, exchanging produce and that, you know, and seemingly having a very good time of it. So I think there are sub-communities because of that. I think there are also communities because I know there are friends who garden near each other and watch over each other's plots, or, you know, they harvest different times. So I think there are some loose confederations, if you will, of, you know, gardeners who know each other and who look after things when you're on vacation. So those communities certainly exist. And then I think the garden committee is sort of a subcommittee of gardeners who know each other better. I mean, who know more about each other's plots and know different strategies and exchange strategies as they're being part of the garden committee. You ask about different reasons for gardeners being here, though. But I think there are gardeners who want to have a few tomato plants, and their gardening season is very short. They come infrequently because tomatoes don't take daily care. They, you know, do their harvest and leave, and they're not as involved in the garden simply because they're not there that much. And they oftentimes will put either black plastic mulch or other mulch so that their garden has just a few items, and they may tend to them well and keep to the garden rules, but they don't fully utilize their plots, and they really don't intend to. They want to have something specific. Then there are gardeners for whom it's a major source of food, and for whom there's a spring garden, a summer garden, a fall garden, you know, and they intend to
have... And we wish there was a winter garden.
intend to have produce, you know, that as much as they can, and they eat out of their garden. It's really common early in the morning, actually, to see Asian gardeners coming for things for breakfast. You know, and then I'll see them later working on something else. So they come, and I think because of their cuisine is such that they would, you know, use greens or things in their breakfast. They come, and actually you can see that they're going to be back. They just came to grab a few things to go home and eat.
What is your sense of people using who are Eagle Heights residents versus community members, and how that works out in the gardens? Because a lot of the Asian gardeners are Eagle Heights residents or parents of Eagle Heights residents.
Some are, some aren't. And some are previous Eagle Heights residents who have kept their garden plot even though they've moved into an apartment or anything like that. Or graduated and gotten jobs. So there is some community members who are also in that Asian community. And I think there are some probably who only learned about the gardens from a Eagle Heights resident, but now you know, they're actually not an Eagle Heights resident. So I'm not sure that, you know, you can divide the communities that way too much. And I didn't realize that really until now. I see the addresses.
And have a better clue about,
you know, where they're coming from. But certainly the ones that are there every day are usually close by because, you know, they're often walking or biking.
So how has your view of the gardens changed over the last... How long have you been registrar for?
3 months.
What's been the most difficult?
Well, I didn't realize how many people wanted individual attention from the registrar. So I knew that there were common chores that needed to be done. But I was unprepared for the large number of special requests, if you will. And that ranges all the way from, I don't know what to do about this insect pest or whatever, to, you know, my neighbor has bean plants that are falling over into my plot. What do I do? And so it was a surprise to me because I know most of my gardeners around my plot, so if something like that would happen, and there are inevitably some of these, usually that works out between the two people, and I didn't go to the registrar for that problem.
Yeah.
So I didn't know. And I think the other thing is that the job of the registrar has grown a lot.
Mm.
And looking back into some, what little historical data I have,
mm-hmm.
we increased the number of plots. We added what were now called half plots, but are going to be called small plots.
Mm-hmm.
And so the number of gardeners went up. So the number of contacts is mm-hmm. increased.
Mm-hmm.
10% this year, but I think it was probably another 10% last year. So
mm-hmm.
there's a, you know, a load growing.
Yeah.
And especially if there's a lot of these individual contacts, and this
mm-hmm.
year we put in a number of those smaller plots late,
mm-hmm.
it meant that instead of getting everyone safely into their plots and, you know, proceeding
mm-hmm.
in March and April, this stretched out into June, July.
Mm-hmm.
So it was... And at that point, there were many other things going on. So it's just become a bigger job,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's kind of an invisible job to the gardeners.
Well, except that they're contacting you. So what do you think, you know,
well,
so what do you think makes them think that you, as a registrar, will solve like all these problems?
They are unsure about mm-hmm. how to deal with it. And so they contact me, and I usually turn it back to them if it's a conflict with their neighbors, I suggest some strategies for contacting their neighbors,
mm-hmm.
and strategies for working out, you know, how they do this in the future,
mm-hmm.
and encourage them to try and build a relationship with their neighbors so that they can address some of these things in the future, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think they're unwilling to do that. I think they're just uncertain about how to do it, and
mm-hmm.
we do try to guard the emails of the gardeners from each other,
mm-hmm.
just so that there won't be any spam and issues
mm-hmm.
that come up.
Mm-hmm.
So we you know, usually suggest to them that they actually leave a note in the other gardener's plot to
mm-hmm.
to contact them, and
yeah.
that way I don't give out this information, and
uh-huh.
they can still make contact.
Uh-huh.
So it's just what do I do? You know, it's just that they're uncertain about direction.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think that the forum and your electronic communication are reaching more gardeners and creating some sort of a bigger or different
kind
of community?
Yeah, we've always had electronic communication, but
yeah.
we really have one-on-one
mm-hmm.
or the committee
mm-hmm.
or every gardener.
Mm.
So
mm-hmm.
I can divide by the U houses versus Eagle Heights.
Okay.
Those are set up separately.
Yeah, different emails.
But otherwise, I don't have an easy way to do a separate row.
Yeah.
The 700s or whatever.
Yeah. Really impossible.
So there is, uh-huh. you know, there's kind of an all or nothing
mm-hmm.
in those communications. The forum mm-hmm. is a much better place for the what do I do about potato beetles?
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of gardeners will respond,
yeah.
and the sort of collective
mm-hmm.
wisdom of a lot of different strategies
mm-hmm.
will come up there and be a source for people who don't even ask the question
mm-hmm.
to look at, too.
Yeah.
So I think the forum is going to be, in the future, a better way, but we're having a slow time getting people to regularly look at the forum.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it gets some flurries of activity when there are contentious issues,
yeah.
and people want to, you know, put in their
mm-hmm.
opinion. But we don't get as much on the new gardener seeking help.
Mm-hmm.
And, it would be nice if we could provide some more of that.
Mm-hmm. What percentage of the gardeners do you think uses the forum?
It's impossible to tell because they don't have to sign in.
Oh, you don't have to, okay, so you
can
can't
read
tell.
Things.
Yeah, but you have to sign in if you want to write something.
If you want to reply
mm-hmm.
or post something,
mm-hmm.
you have to log in, which is mm-hmm. a very simple thing and can be done anonymously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, and indeed, I don't know, but I suspect that there are people who use our forum who are not Eagle Heights or University Houses gardeners.
Huh.
And I went to a community gardening meeting for Madison, and I mentioned we had the forum, and I told them there was no problem with them signing up, you know,
mm-hmm.
to be part of that forum if they wanted
mm-hmm.
to, especially for the
huh.
general gardening information,
mm-hmm.
not the specific to our site.
Yeah.
And
huh.
so it's possible people in
another
Michigan
place? are
you know, or come in as guests and don't log in or do, and we wouldn't know, and we don't care because you know, that information is essentially no cost to us, and it's an opportunity for learners to share.
Yeah, so it's a good thing.
So I like the forum because it has that openness, and it has anonymity if people want anonymity. You know, if they want to ask about something and not appear stupid, they can sign on as, you know, new gardener.
and experience.
And, you know, so it's it provides several levels of entry, and it makes it, I think, easier for people to exchange stuff. So I like that, and I want the forum to continue. But, you know, everyone has many things they check every day. And so, you know, working the garden forum into their sort of regular checking is something we haven't really accomplished yet.
Yeah. I wonder how you'd go about doing that. Just more broadcasting.
Yeah, I think when things come up, like tomato blight, we tried to put everything on the forum. After doing one morning on the general email, so that people would start looking there to see things. And it's one thing to put on the forum when we're talking about plot fees, or, you know, which we did last year and sort of started a lot of people into the forum. But it's, I want it to be something that isn't just for contentious items, but is for general information and discussion and sharing the wisdom of the garden as a whole, because there are so many different strategies people use that seem to work, and you want, you know, to sort of offer all those options to people who are asking questions.
I know Will has mentioned trying to, and you also want to help new gardeners. What are some ways that you're thinking of helping new gardeners or new plants?
At the Seed Fair this year, we offered a couple workshops on things, you know, new gardeners and older gardeners were welcome, but, you know, new gardeners especially invited. And Melinda did a workshop on, you know, getting started. We have offered workshops on seed starting. We have Robin's book accessible. It's a really wonderful handbook. It's accessible in the gardens, but it's also accessible online in the forums. And, or on the website, I guess it's separate from the forums. And we offered orientation this year for the first time.
That's great,
And we had a couple hundred people did, not a couple hundred, 100 people did orientation. So we had a couple different nights, and 20 people a night or something. And that was an opportunity for new gardeners to just understand the physical layout and the resources available. And they also ask a lot of questions during that time, so that, I mean, that was another good way to think about it. I hope the forum has also the opportunity for individual questions. But new gardeners are a real issue for us because we have such turnover. Most community gardens have less than 10% new gardeners.
Really? Less than 10% new gardeners.
Some of them less than 5. You have to stay on the waiting list for years to get a plot because everyone renews their plot. And you have it until you give it up, which we have a lot more uncertainty about year to year because of our priority system. But also we have people graduating, and so we have a lot more turnover, which means we have a lot more new gardeners coming in. And we have a lot of gardeners who have never gardened before. They're not just new to Eagle Heights. They're new to planting and harvesting and the whole concept. So I think we have a special educational problem or opportunity that we have so many gardeners and so many of them are really just do not know how to get started. So I had one gardener this year who had a plot, and by July the jury had come around and said it was excessively weedy, and I knew it had been plowed or tilled twice. So I asked her, I said, you know, it doesn't look like, I didn't see any plants coming up. Did you plant any seeds? And she said, no, she was waiting till the weeds died down. And that's just an example of, you know, we missed the boat in telling her how to use the seats that she had. And she just did not understand. Mm-hmm. And if we had had an opportunity to get her started, I think she would have been a successful gardener. And as it was, she was reassigned a smaller plot in the hopes that she that had been recently tilled, so that, you know, maybe that would get her a fresh start and a chance to get going. And she just abandoned it too. And I felt badly that, you know, she really was potentially a gardener who could have succeeded, but she just didn't know to ask for help, and we didn't know she needed help. So there's that.
Yeah. How does one of the things that I've been thinking about, how the tensions between all these new gardeners and different gardening styles, and then the weed juries, and how you know, they're two really important parts of how the garden is run, but they're sometimes in tension. So how can we manage to
and not teach them
in time?
We're trying to do with the weed jury. We didn't used to have a weed jury.
Okay.
And
yeah. When did the
I don't know when it came in. Had at least 4 years.
Okay.
I think it came in at maybe 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. I think I gardened a year when
There was no weed jury.
And the problem that happened was that abandoned plots were, no one realized they were abandoned. Mm. And so they couldn't be reassigned to anyone, and they just sat there and grew weeds, which was, you know, a detriment to all the neighbors. And at the same time, we couldn't get a new gardener in there because we didn't realize it. We didn't know if it was abandoned or it was just a weedy plot. So
you can't do anything with it.
So we went to the weed jury to try to address that issue, and especially as we were starting to get pressure by having a long waiting list, which initially we didn't. Initially we actually had plots, and after everyone had applied, we'd say, you know, there's a few plots left, and if you'd like a second plot, you should apply. So that was ending, and we had a waiting list, and we felt badly about these plots just sitting there where you didn't know what was going on, and seeding weeds into everyone else's plot at the same time. So the idea came up with a committee about a weed jury. And the idea was it's a jury of your peers. And we hoped that it would be an educational part for the jurors as well. And we encouraged people whose plots had been put on weed plots to serve on the jury. Okay, so that they didn't feel singled out, and we valued their opinion too. But that would give them the opportunity to see all these plots and, you know, which ones were weedy and what it meant to be weedy. Sometimes people don't recognize weeds. So right now there's several options with the weedy plot. They get a notice, and they are told that their plot was judged to be weedy. They can clean it up on their own in the 2-week period. If they can't clean it up but they still want to continue gardening, they can request to have it cleaned for them at the workday. And they would owe us an extra work day, and that wouldn't count as their work day, but they could get, and we usually send 4 people to clean a plot. It takes them about 3 hours if it's really solidly weedy. And that, you know, gets them back to a place where they can go on. And perhaps 1 in 5 or so request that option. So they can get help. Right, so it's an offer of help as well as a mention that, you know, we're worried about the plot because it's starting to be an issue. And, you know, then they can also say they've abandoned the plot. And if it's early enough in the season, they can get some refund. So they
Oh, you can get a refund if you...
This year was July 1. We're actually moving it back to June 1 because we'd like to have people really get started, and we'd like to have the plots turn over early enough that someone else can get some things.
Some real summer things in.
So that's, we are moving it forward, but yes, they can get a refund, and we tell them that, you know, in the in the email about the plot, and I try to word it in such a way that, you know, that Natalie had a nice little part in it that said, we're not trying to get rid of people in the garden, we're just trying to make it a better place for everyone. And we see this as an issue in future weeding for everyone else, so, you know, we need you to at least tell us what you'd like to do. So,
So I know that they used to do weeds couldn't get above a certain height.
And it we went to the more, I give instructions when I do it to mm-hmm. gardeners that what we're worried about is seeding weeds.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of them are seeding when they're quite short.
Oh, some of them are very much seeding when they're
and
short.
And the tall ones, if they aren't seeding yet, we don't care. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. it's unsightly, but it's their garden plot.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the seeding issue is the one that we're almost concerned mm-hmm. about.
Mm-hmm. So what about the rhizome plants, like thistles?
Yeah.
I know it's the biggest problem, really. But
they're much less than they used to be because we've had the jury.
Hmm.
Now, so we have a jury almost every 2 weeks, and they pick somewhere. I tell them between 4 and 7 plants.
Okay, so you actually give them instructions that will find.
They make little maps of the plots as they go around.
Oh, interesting.
Because they can't tell as they first go through which are going to be in the top. You know, the worst 5 or whatever. So I ask them to
draw. So it's not just some unlimited numbers.
No, I try to keep them in a narrow range of, you know, kind of picking out mm-hmm. the most difficult plots, and then we'll work on those as time.
Mm-hmm.
But this way I have a record if a plot sort of is marked down as pretty weedy the time before but didn't receive a notice, and then the next time it's still really weedy. I've got some history to know what's going on. So the other thing is we have these divided plots like yours, where if it's weedy, I need to know from the map whose side or, how to approach this. If it's only half weedy, is it because one gardener has abandoned that half?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the plan. So now they have very, it's kind of limited, but they do look at all the plots. They do kind of come up with this. And this year, we did send a couple juries out for weedy issues.
Oh,
the
interesting.
First year we've done this.
So what was that?
Well, last year we had a big discussion about fences because people were putting up chicken wire fences right on the boundary line, allowing the weeds to grow into them, which meant it was really hard for them to weed, and it was very hard for the mowers because the chicken wire fences.
So the boundary not between plots, but between the plot and the path, or both.
Oftentimes it's a complete
all the way around
perimeter. And I think their reasoning was that it would keep varmints out, and it doesn't. But, it was kind of, they were struggling with this, how to set the boundary issue.
Mm-hmm.
So we put a part in the application that said fences were not encouraged, and that if a plot was abandoned, the fence would be torn out before the new gardener went in, so that we could try to work backwards and get, and we have a lot less fences than we used to have.
Really?
But we did send the jury around a couple times to talk about plots that look pristine inside. And then the fence row is just full of weeds that are seeding and going everywhere and the mower can't get close to. And so so then Natalie and subsequently I sent weedy fence notices to them telling them, the fence row is really an issue, and I'd send it to both parties if it was between plots because I couldn't always tell who's it was.
Yeah.
And
maybe it was some historical gardeners that's just been...
Right. And some of them were very difficult to pull out. But we did tell new gardeners that any new gardener who wanted to have a fence removed, we would, we'd take them out early in the season. We did. So a few of the earliest work days were fence removed. So that was, trying to address this. It's essentially problematic to have the fence, and we've been suggesting to people that they have either a fence well above the ground, so they leave a little space under it. If they want to demarcate the border, they leave a little space so that they can pull weeds through and out, or that it can get mowed right up to.
Yeah.
Or better yet, that they use a string or something that marks a boundary but doesn't, isn't a problem to weed under.
I've definitely seen a lot of those this year that just have put strings across.
And that's been my practice to do that too, because sometimes people do walk through the plots and they don't realize you planted something. And so when I plant a bed, I just tie a little flimsy cotton string around it. That works. And up until then, I had to replant beds, 2 and 3 times because somebody had walked through thinking it was not yet planted. It was planted.
Mm-hmm.
So the spring, it's when it's not so obvious, it's So, I mean, we're really trying to give support mm-hmm. at the same time that we point out that there might be problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that attitude is mm-hmm. one we'll try to continue, you know, that we're not trying to come down heavy-handed.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the gardens, they look a lot different than they did 3 years ago.
Wow.
And if you go to any other community garden, mm-hmm. you will see fences around each plot,
mm-hmm.
and indeed walkways between each plot. So there's fences on, you know, two fences
mm-hmm.
with a little narrow 18-inch walkway between them.
Mm-hmm.
And those fences are really, really weedy.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you leave them permanently, what you end up with are perennial weeds that, you know, are deep-rooted and no amount of mowing or whatever
mm-hmm.
is really going to be able to tackle them, because mm-hmm. you can't get in there with a spade and you can't mm-hmm. take things down. So I count that as a positive thing mm-hmm. from the juries and the trying to move mm-hmm. in this direction, is that we're cutting down the perennial weeds that were there.
Mm-hmm.
There are still plots that are in very bad shape.
Yeah.
And there are still border areas and paths, and uh-huh. have this issue that people have been digging perennial weeds out of the path and causing path erosion. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's the land management, when it's split into very, very small plots,
mm-hmm.
creates all sorts of border issues. If you know about ecology and border issues,
mm-hmm.
you know, we have it in the extreme, because we have these postage stamp areas
mm-hmm.
and borders, and most of the things that we're struggling mm-hmm. with don't happen in the middle of the plot. They happen at the edges
mm-hmm.
where two gardeners kind of say, oh no, the comfort's on your side.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that causes mm-hmm. it to just proliferate, and pretty soon it's everybody's problem. So
uh-huh.
it's
mm-hmm.
That's what we're trying to address with the tree, and trying to help
mm-hmm.
both new and continuing gardeners kind of be mm-hmm. aware of it. It's very interesting to me when you see a plot that's just so tiny and so carefully taken care of,
mm-hmm.
until you get to some forgotten corner where they pile a compost or something,
mm-hmm.
at which point they just abandon that little blip.
Mm-hmm.
It might even yeah. be in their plot, but you know, it's the plot, it's the space they're not managing, and
mm-hmm.
that is where then we get this
yeah.
whole issue and
yeah.
the mice and all sorts
yeah.
of.
The mice, just, I didn't realize that they were, the mice live right in the overgrown areas.
They use those as cover, and
mm-hmm.
they, and if they're, you know, piled weeds or
mm-hmm.
things like that, they'll
that they can nest in them.
You know, make their winter nests and things
uh-huh.
like that. So it's,
yeah.
you know, it's a common problem
mm-hmm.
caused by these little
yeah.
Non-managed spots. And
do you think besides the weeds, we have other border or boundary
there's
problems? Like what else arises from
yeah,
having these?
So shading has come up several
yeah.
times, where someone plants a border of sunflowers that they think would be very attractive, and
mm-hmm.
they are, and they attract the birds,
mm-hmm.
but they also shade their neighbors,
mm-hmm.
and so their neighbors perhaps didn't know there were going to be sunflowers and planted things that need full sun.
Right on the end.
There. And
uh-huh.
depending on the orientation of the
mm-hmm.
plot and the uh-huh. tall plants. So
yeah.
we have a little note in this year that says, you know, tall planting shouldn't shade your neighbors, and
uh-huh.
and
yeah.
we hope that that'll be a way that we could then go to them and say, there's an issue here, because
mm-hmm.
you know, your pole beams are not only falling over, but
shading.
And that,
huh.
that's come
yeah.
up a number of times, because,
yeah.
you know, in a small plot, if you want to make maximum use of space, your awesome will go up.
Yep.
so, you know, their pea vines or whatever
uh-huh.
it is. I think the sunflowers have been one of the ones that has been most difficult to deal with, because people like them on borders.
Mm-hmm.
You
it's
know,
a flower.
It's a flower. It's pretty. It,
uh-huh.
You know, it forms a kind of fence.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's, you know, been where people chose to put the sunflowers,
mm-hmm.
and you know, most of the time, unless you put it in the front where it shades the path, depending
mm-hmm.
on what
orientation
you
have,
you know, yeah. you run into this. You're shading somebody some of the time, and if it's just a little cluster, you know, it doesn't shade for very long. But if it's
yeah.
an entire row, it can shade really
mm-hmm.
half a plant. So,
yeah.
I think, you know, that's been a border issue. It's been the issues that the plots are not very square. and a number of them have kind of odd corners, and that the sight line between the end posts is skewed around somewhat, and then what do I do? Because when they planted, it was in their plot, but now their squash is traveling my way. And so there's these, you know, encroachment issues that people just don't quite know how to handle.
And maybe it wasn't even meant by the person who planted.
No, it isn't really intentionally planting over into the neighbor, although that has occurred, but it's more often that they planted something that's just going to spread itself all over the place. Or shade things. And you know, that's true if they're not weeding their plants at pot and you're getting wiregrass and the stones coming over. So there's those sorts of issues. Mm-hmm. There isn't a physical boundary between, and we'd like to encourage not to have a physical boundary. So then there gets to be these negotiation issues.
Yeah.
And I think the half pots have been problematic too. We had half pots maybe a long time ago. I can see in the records it was on the applications, but we had gone away from that when we had enough pots for everyone. As the waiting list grew, we started asking people if they would share, especially if they only wanted three tomato plants. And in doing that, there's the how do you share the plot? And that, you know, I think is difficult, especially since the two people are not necessarily friends who jointly applied for a plot, but are two on people who don't know each other prior to gardening. And so then it if you aren't on the same schedule and you don't see each other very often, it becomes really very difficult to decide. I encourage people to put a string again. You know,
down the middle.
The middle, maybe at ground level even, you know, to just keep it out of the way. But that would, you know, if you could agree on where to put the string, that would be kind of the negotiation you needed. And if the plot's square, it's much easier, but if it's kind of odd-shaped, it's...
What's the middle of any of some of those plots? It's impossible to know how you divide them in half.
So, and I think we're going to go to a more formal, we're going to call them small plots and large plots. We started that with the A row. The A row all have their own number.
Will they still be half?
That, and the A row, you know, was put in that way, and we'll continue that way. And I'm going to try and form a row, I think, in the 200s as people.
Or 600. 200s or 600. The 200s, my new plot is.
Your row.
Yeah,
because I'd like to have a row
near the end.
Contiguous, fairly close to the entrance, and near water for you, because it'll be a lot of new gardeners. And I thought that that would be the way to do it. I would choose the 100s, because they'd be easier to divide, since there's access from both sides. But the 100s have some gardeners who've been there for a very long time, and so the turnover is less than when you move away from the 100s. So I'm trying to find a row, and so I think I'm going to start in the 200s at any row. Any gardener who leaves and doesn't reapply for their plot, their plot will become 202A, 202B. And they'll have their own names, and they, you know, we can mark them with white stakes, and that should solve the informal sharing problem. And then it's just a little bit easier to have them all in one section where we can reserve those for people who want some plots. But you don't need to worry about your personal plot.
I'm not worried about my personal plot.
I mean, it'll just be as they come over.
When we were talking around, I thought you meant the 600 row where my half plot is right now.
I don't think so, because they're so weirdly shaped.
They are weirdly shaped.
I was hoping for a row that was kind of rectangular.
Instead of curving.
And
that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
The dividing in half is really tricky.
I think it is. And yet I think we have enough gardeners who are either new, want just a limited space, or would accept a limited space while hoping for a larger space. I think that we'll go that direction now, at least while the window system is still on.
What have you thought of garden oversight committee meetings?
Changes. I've only been to one.
You've only been to one. Oh, that's right, because you came in only, and they were a
they only
for
meet
the summer.
During the school year, and
that's right.
I knew some of them. I had gone to one, the last one in June, actually. I went to as an observer because I knew I was going to be starting the registrar's job, and so I went, but I, you know, was not in a
really
formal
in
role
it.
At
yeah.
that point. Yeah. So I've only been to one formally, and you know, I think my what I've heard from people is that they've gotten to be much less contentious, and that they're functioning better, and it is a good place for us to do the communications because all those partners on the same part of land. It's very important to kind of have someone say, we've had this issue with your constituents, in this way.
Yeah.
And so this is a place where all that can happen. And I think it's also reassuring to campus that we have formal oversight and that there's mechanisms for bringing issues to the table as they come up and for someone to kind of track of what's going on and the changes in the gardens as we change things. And they are very interested in our policies and they're interested in the fact that, you know, they see this as a primary resource for university apartments and also dorm residents because a number of the students are actually dorm residents, not Eagle Heights or university houses, but still housing. So they're you know, concerned that about the priority system. They're concerned about keeping it a reasonable price, but still keeping it fiscally solid. And then there are, like I said, all these boundary issues with the various partners.
Boundary issues are just mind-blowing in that piece of land. All the borders and things.
They are, but you know,
deal with.
It seems like it's sort of working.
I know.
There'll be another blow-up when there's something that really has big impact on many of the partners. But at the moment, there's kind of a give and take, I guess I'd say.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling that there's a sympathy for the different activities and you know how I can see that from your standpoint that would be this way. So I'm happy about that.
As a gardener, what do you think about the way they're going about the prairie restoration and having to use pesticides and areas surrounding our garden? Is that something you think about, or?
Yeah, it is something I think about, and it isn't just the prairie restoration, because prairie restoration has primarily been using herbicides.
Yes, that's true.
And I think there's the second concern, because the CALS research class uses pesticides. And actually have a variety of applicators, because different laboratories come to it's tend their, you know, research plots. So so there's less consistency is what I'd say, or a potential for less consistency. But they've been very aware of our concerns too. And there are these buffer areas you know, in place, which is, I think, a big help. And you know, I think the gardeners are run the gamut from some of the people in Eagle Heights would be perfectly happy to use herbicides. We had this discussion when we had the problem with the erosion plot. And there were also people who are very concerned, and there was an incident this summer where in Eagle Heights, near the apartments, they used Roundup for the weeds in the gutters and things. Because we had a new service, didn't understand. And it caused a huge uproar, and they're doing
that on the forum.
So that's
big.
It's, for some people, it's an extremely important issue that we are organic and stay organic. For others, they're mostly organic, mm-hmm. but, you know, we're not certified, and mm-hmm. they see that there are these problems. But I think it's the whole side.
No, yeah. Damn it.
Me, personally, I'm okay. I'm sort of in the middle of the gardens.
Yeah.
And I feel
it
like
depends
there's a big
on your location. You have a huge buffer.
So,
yeah, your plot is right about smack dab in the middle. Started to get at it. Huh. Yeah, it's complicated.
And I also do volunteer work in prairie restoration and habitat mm-hmm. restoration. Mm-hmm. And we do use herbicides in that work. And so it's not like I haven't seen the reasoning for that.
Yeah. In prairie restorations, it's nearly impossible. I mean, you can't do it without some of the herbicides.
Mm-hmm. You can't. But it's, it's, you know, backbreaking labor, and it's a lot of fire.
Yeah.
And fire is not an option in the prairie up there.
Do they not burn?
They have in the past, but I understood that there was a moratorium on burning. They did round up that one field that was so weedy, the newest one. I have the impression that they actually were hoping that they'd then be able to burn that field in the spring with all the dead debris.
Uh-huh.
But I know they haven't had it burned for several years, and I used to know someone who participated in their burns, and I know there was a
ban on the burning.
Yeah, and then, and then I think this came because the city of Madison had a parks fire that was a prescribed burn.
And
there was just sort of this, we're so close to so many other things that we can't afford to
have that happen. Interesting.
So, knowing, you know, if burning is not a every year option or, you know, regular option, then I think, you know, they have their needs too. So I'm kind of understanding that part.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just glad that, you know, we have the buffer zones and that the gardens are somewhat insulated.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
And we have actually tried to pull garlic mustard in the tree islands and the border along Lake Mendota Drive and the border along the dirt road so that they would have less reason to use pesticides close to the gardens.
Gardener. Oh, the spring work days.
Yes.
Oh,
some
really?
Of the spring work days.
Spring garlic mustard.
We sent a crew to do garlic mustard. So.
That's a really interesting use of a work crew. I like it.
Well, and then there's comfort and things too that we were trying to get out of it. So it wasn't the only thing, but it meant that, you know, we were able to tell them we'll take care of that piece.
These negotiations. We've covered everything in a wide-ranging way. Is there anything you thought I might ask you, or any questions you have for me?
I'm still interested in what the primary
question is. I'm not entirely sure still.
Yeah.
No, I'm working on it. When I wrote my proposal, I said it would be about the boundary questions, how boundaries are formed between different social groups, but also between different ecological communities, and then how social groups use natural areas to say that they have to sort of draw their own, how do you use rhetoric about natural areas around you to reinforce where you should be in space or not in space. I think I'll still be writing a little bit about that. What I've been thinking about recently, as I've been meeting with Kathy, and I'm going to be meeting with Kathy Bruner a lot more, to find out, just to talk with her about some of the management things she does. But when I talked with her last time, one of my primary goals is to make this useful for the gardeners and the community that's there. And what you've said to me and what other people have said to me is just an organizational history or understanding what this place has been is really important. And so one of my primary goals now is to write about what it has been to all the different people. And so just having a history of thoughts and concepts of the gardens as a place and how that's changed over time.
Yeah.
I think is really important, and even though it's not an academic question necessarily, so I'm ranging more into what the gardens are as a place to the many people that use them.
What I find when I talk to gardeners is that there's a sacredness to that place that sort of transcends a piece of land.
Yeah.
You know, and makes it the community and the nature and the gardening are kind of all intertwined in this place. So
I'm trying, and it's interesting, it's not even gardener. So I think this will end up being a very reflexive piece of writing. But I don't know, I think she comes in the afternoon, so I don't know if you've seen her. There's an Indian woman who's named Yogini, and I've just talked to her once. But her daughter doesn't have a plot. I ran into her, and so I said hi. And she said, "Oh, look at the beautiful nature all around us." And I was like, "So do you garden here? Do you?" Yeah. She's like, "Oh, no, I don't. They get the CSA from F.H. King." Yeah. And she's like, I make sure I come here every day." She sits at the picnic table, says her prayers, and walks away. I mean, she's just here for 3 months when her daughter lives at Eagle Heights. But it's just like, that's the kind of place it becomes to people. And so
a lot of people take their babies up there.
A lot of people take their
strollers.
Babies. Trying to disentangle how people see it as a place, and why has it become more than just community gardens, you know? And I think that
I'll encourage you to talk to other community gardens. Okay, as a contrast
to it.
Now, I think they also feel how important their place is.
Yeah.
It's a little different because some of them are surrounded by city.
Mm-hmm.
So I think on the east side there's one that's right down, somewhere down near the railroad tracks there. We had a gardener come, and he had been gardening down there, and he moved, and so he was closer to this garden. And he said, "Oh, this is just heaven." Mm-hmm. He said, "I was surrounded by buildings before, you know." And
that's an interesting boundary issue too, is that it's so unexpected to find a garden in the middle of a nature preserve, even though it just became became renamed a nature preserve in 2005.
Right.
But it's still, it's an unexpected joint use of land to have something that we think of as natural versus agriculture, and how do those two landscapes interact is interesting to me, too.
You mentioned the Indian woman coming. There's also a guy who does Tai Chi early in the morning.
Okay.
He usually is down by the shed for the cows research plots, and he does. I won't say it's Tai Chi for sure, but it's a martial art. I hear him because he makes noises when he does of the motions, and for him that's kind of a private space that he can be there before very many people get to.
And then the other. When I've been thinking about boundaries, and I think it will still come in to this, is that it's a place that also transcends public versus private spaces, and it's interesting to see how gardeners negotiate their private space of the garden and having conversations within their plot, but then it's also a very public space in that you don't own the land, but when you start planting perennials and you're there for a long time, you begin to feel, even if you're only there for a year, you feel like it's your land versus, and that's one of the university garden tensions
this
public versus private, who owns the land,
right? And it's,
do you own it because you care for it,
and land ownership.
I know.
I was trying to tell the police about theft.
Oh, that's right.
How much the thefts mean, so
That
Corrine had helped us with some of the things, but she admits there's not a lot they can do, and that we need to do our own observation and try to police ourselves, essentially. But she's sympathetic because there's not a lot to be done. But another officer was up here because Corrine had an accident.
Oh no!
She was hit by an SUV.
On her bike? When she was on her bike? Oh, goodness.
So she's in the hospital. Like I said, she's coming back. She didn't answer me on an email. I didn't know why she was gone. But another officer was up just to check in and said something about a squash being stolen and was saying, you know, come on, it's a squash. It doesn't, you know, it's not worth that much. And I was trying to tell them that, you know, for one thing, these people are poor and so the money issue is a little different when you really just don't have any. And the other thing is that the ownership after you've cultivated that and had this relationship with the plant, I didn't say it that way to the police, but I feel that way. You know, the value is different. It's amplified like it was an heirloom from your grandmother, or that emotional carryover is beyond the food aspect of it, and that, you know, it feels very much a violation when someone steals that, even though the monetary value is relatively low, and that that's that involvement. And I also think we want people to be involved because we want them to take good care of the land. And we can't get them to... We need them to have a certain level of ownership to do a responsible job in you know, improving the gardens for everyone, both social and long-term.
Which is where the turnover comes in again, and the priorities and the balance between
and
having
it,
people who are there for a long time.
I think also there's this, we don't want to interfere with what people do get out of the garden. You know, if they really just want winter squash and they don't have room for it anywhere else, if their whole plot is winter squash, you know, you could look at it and say, well, it's kind of a waste of space because you only get a few winter squash out of whole big plot. But that's their intention. Or, you know, if they want to plant the whole thing in flowers, I know the Asian gardeners find it amusing that I have flowers. They come by and they give me thumbs up signs saying they like the flower, but they never would plant the flower because it's, you know, not a food item. And I think it seems frivolous or wasteful to them to spend the space something that's just for looks.
Also, for you, it's a barrier, slightly.
But
you know,
and then, I put it up. Well, I'm going to have flowers anyway. It does seem to me that it's easier to keep people from, you know, pilfering a strawberry if it isn't right there on the edge. And that's worked pretty well for me, and people do appreciate the flowers too. But I think there's you know, the garden management doesn't want to step in on those individual choices. We're just trying to make sure that the gardens function well for the community. And there are these common issues that you know, come in that like the weed seeding, that become, you know,
becomes a common problem.
I mean, I think the weeding plots don't look good to the garden oversight community. You know, it looks like this space isn't being well utilized. And that's a sort of secondary thing to the garden, because it's more a question of trying to make sure that we identify abandoned plots. You know, we have a fair number of people turn over. I think now there's some abandoned plots in there, because we didn't do a jury the last time. I've noticed a couple plots where I think, I bet those people left. Because they've been very nicely taken care of, and now suddenly they're very weedy and there's produce on the ground and stuff. You know, it makes me think that, you know, they got a job, or they moved out of town, or they moved to a place that had a closer by garden. So, but we don't know. And I send an email. If it bounces, then I have some idea that maybe something's happened, but, you know, they keep their same email.
Who's going to know? It's complicated. Did I answer your question about my research questions?
I'm still waiting for the zeroing
in. I know. It's coming. It has to come. It's hard. There's so much that I'd like to do at the same time. No specific question that I have yet.
I think the gardens are a very... It's an individualized experience. And the act of gardening is an act of art. It's not like everybody's garden should look alike. It's the choices of which plants and which varieties and how much of whatever is part of the joy of garden. But it's means that it's such an individual experience. I think it's going to be hard for you.
I know.
To come up with some common threads that go through those experiences. And yet I think they're there.
I know.
To ferret out. So it's just, I guess my encouragement would be that you need to really narrow in a question because it's going to be very difficult for you, even with a narrow question.
I know.
Of this individualized experience. And I think it also depends on where you are. Have you been to University Hospital?
I have. Twice. Yeah. Just walk through.
So I find it has a different flavor.
Should go again.
It's partly because there are more faculty and staff gardening there because it's close to you have it. It's partly because their management system is a little different. They run their own work days and they, have kind of a different personality group that, that makes decisions and decides how to work at it. Yeah. And I think also because they're smaller, they don't always share in the discussion as much because they feel like, well, it doesn't really apply to us. So there is this tension between the two garden spots as well, which we really make every attempt to try and...
I mean, that's because they've always been two different gardens.
Yeah, and it for a long time, they have self-identified leaders to kind of bring to the group the university houses viewpoints. And that really helps, but they have a history of sometimes being overlooked when an issue comes up, and if no one is there from new houses, the rest of us just don't say, wait, how will this apply? You have it needs that in there, and many times it's fine, but sometimes it's really not going to work. And I don't know whether we should have them exactly the same, but on the other hand, we have to, in the decision making, certainly be inclusive of each of the site's different aspects. But I think it's, they also have, nice surroundings in terms of natural areas. They have the neighbor issues with children.
It's been going on for a while. I've been reading a bit in the archives.
And that Shorewood is a big participant in our garden, in the Heights Gardens. They're the ones who bring in equipment to turn compost. They're the ones who bring in leaves. And that's been a negotiation that took some time, and I think Will was very good at trying to build that relationship and cultivate that relationship, which seems to be actually a positive for us and for Shorewood. And now F.H. King and the Cows Research Plots have also been taking some of the compost of leaves into their areas, which I'll have to say a few gardeners have said, wait, those are our leaves. and you have to explain, this is a kind of communal thing, and we're getting all this help from Shorewood, there's just these boundary things that come in all the time. And I think that's a good place to be working, but I think
I need to narrow
question.
And I think it will be something with boundary negotiations.
I think that a private property, personal property mix is also an interesting one. There's the city of Madison is pretty strict. They now have, I don't know if you saw the hoop house discussion that was in the State Journal, I believe.
No, I didn't. I should look at it.
Look at it.
Yeah.
So people have been wanting to put hoop houses, you know, these sort of like the F.H. King, but smaller probably, mm-hmm. in their backyards to grow greens the longer season, perhaps all year.
Yeah.
And the city of Madison is apparently considering them permanent structures and now is asking them to be to code. Mm-hmm. So there's this discussion of, you know, should they be to code? Should they be there up mm-hmm. all year? So temporary structures like gazebos or something are allowed. But, you know, that's I think there's a 3-month limit on it. Mm-hmm. So there's this, people feel on their private property mm-hmm. or rental property mm-hmm. that is privately owned, mm-hmm. they feel that they, you know, should be able to do what they want to do. Mm-hmm. And yet there is still this common issues aspect. It comes in with the chickens.
Yeah, the chickens.
You know, comes in with, so now there's the hoop houses. Uh-huh. There have been people who have turned their front yards into prairies who have mm-hmm. had big issues in the past, although now it's starting to work into the culture in such a way that mm-hmm. that's an acceptable way to manage your front lawn.
Yeah.
So there are always these issues.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even when you own the land.
Even, yeah.
So it's not mm-hmm. it's not unique to this odd leasing for a year situation that
yeah.
we have. But
yeah.
it is more obvious in our yeah. situation, and we have many, many more boundaries.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not a only more obvious, but it's also much more transparent what people do in their land. There are not a lot of physical barriers that you can put up.
Yeah, you can't put it in the backyard.
You can't put it in the backyard behind your fence. You can't. You know, you are, even when you're conducting private business, you are in full view of whatever public it is. So,
yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So my art group, I meet with an art group on Thursdays. You know, almost every year we'll go up one Thursday to Eagle Heights. Just because it's a great place to paint and find subjects to, to paint and photograph.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's that, what you said before about this, you know, public space. You know, this is a area that, and I mean, Pitney Point has, you know, all the Lakeshore Preserve has the same issue about how do people utilize this space. Kathy was complaining about the rope swing.
Oh, further. Yeah, I know what the rope swing is. Yeah.
And so apparently it's been there for years.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it
for erosion problems, but also because people go down to the lake and scramble back up. And the lake is, I mean, the hillside.
Yeah, hillside. Yeah.
But also apparently there's now been parties with beer litter, you know, beer cans and stuff. So, you know, this is the same sort of thing. Mm-hmm. What's allowed, what isn't allowed, how does it impact the land and the community? And
exactly.
So, it's, it's a struggle.
Yeah.
But it's also what we're doing in the space, in every public space, and perhaps private spaces, too. I mean, there's this how do we manage the land and the overlaps with the borders?
Yeah. Yeah, it's complicated. It's fascinating. Yeah, so. Yeah. And how do you manage it depends on what purpose you want that land to have, and then whose purpose is being, you know.
And there's some priority issues. So the city of Madison is struggling with community gardens as well. You know, they have public spaces. Should they put community gardens in? And they have in places. On the other hand, you know, there's soccer fields are you know, desired for that part of it, and there's plenty of people who want to walk their dogs, and so there's this continual, what's the best use of the space?
Yeah, always. Yeah, I just need to narrow in, but yeah, we'll be good. Whatever, it will be interesting, whatever it is, but...
But I think you should look at some of the other communities.
Yeah, I should talk to...
You know, there's the one up at the Health Farm site? Department of Motor Vehicles, too?
You go
from the Department of Motor Vehicles parking lot, if you go towards University Ave, Mm-hmm. There's a community garden there. It's in peril because they're talking about tearing down the Farms building.
Oh, really?
New state buildings there and stuff.
Oh,
and
wow.
They were on a year-to-year kind of deadline for moving out. The city's been struggling with what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. But they have, I want to say, 60 to 80 mm-hmm. pretty good size. Mm-hmm. A very loyal group of neighbors. Mm-hmm. And they do serve, there's a lot of low-income and disability accessible mm. housing and senior mm-hmm. housing in that mm-hmm. area, and their garden mm-hmm. is a lot of
those. I'll have to.
And they have fences around everything, and I just, you know, I was up there for one of the community garden meetings, and I was just like, wow, fences, lots of fences. and it was, I went back to Eagle Heights and went, you know, we used to have about this many fences, and it really, it's different. Now you look from flat to pot, you know, and mm-hmm. before there used to be these sort of barriers, and it was enlightening to me to think about that
mm-hmm.
Change.
That shift. Yeah. It's nice not having a lot of barriers. One of my friends, Abby, who has a plot, who also has a plot at Troy Gardens, she was saying how much she enjoyed Eagle Heights because there aren't the fences everywhere, and she said it was a little off-putting to have fences between everybody's plots.
I mean, we really did it for weed management mm-hmm. because that was where it was coming up, but mm-hmm. but there is a different community feeling about it being mm-hmm. kind of open.
Mm-hmm.
What you said about doing things, private things in public, I mean, mm-hmm. that's mm-hmm. there too.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I don't know. I think it's actually a positive thing to have that openness.
I agree. I think it is probably a positive thing.
You know, and I can wave to my to gardeners. They're a couple rows over. But once the the summer plot, all the plantings are up, mm-hmm. there starts to be a really mm-hmm. hard time to see very far, but still, it's kind of fun in the spring when it just seems so wide open.
Yeah, the other fascinating thing about this landscape is the seasonality, how different it feels almost every 2 weeks. If you're there,
And the prairie's like that too.
The prairie's very much a
community where the plants you see in the spring, you can't even find them in the fall. Uh-huh. You know, they're there, but they're really very
slow. It's true.
They get all their nutrients in the spring and then go back. And I think sometimes maybe I should do some sort of, really companion gardening like that. But most of the things I think of would be herbs or something.
And yeah,
they all sort of mature at the same time. You know, uh-huh. It's not a spring or unless you think about chives or something.
And chives are round, Ollie. Sort of.
Yeah, I mean they get kind of raggedy at the end of summer and then kind of come back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know,
The thinking about there's also seasons and like temporal boundaries or dimensions of gardening. Yeah. Interesting.
And then there's the very early in the spring. Mm-hmm. You'll see people at the end of February starting to lose some dirt if it hasn't frozen.
Mm-hmm.
People sometimes on the beds, especially raised beds, they have a lot of organic material.
Mm.
You know, so they're black and mm-hmm. the sun will warm them up soon.
Mm-hmm.
You can start things end of February. I've planted a few things end of February some years.
Wow.
Well, there'll be a few other people in the garden, you know.
Yeah.
How was your winter?
And
then, it builds, and then, of course, the new gardeners don't get their plot assignments until somewhat later, so, this year we're going to try and do that at the Seed Fair, which will accelerate it quite a bit.
Wow. Yeah.
Rather than
waiting until that opening.
Yeah, we waited until early April, mm-hmm. and there's been a request every year, why can't we do this a little sooner so people could at least start cleanup if you don't start planting it, at least, mm-hmm. Drag off stuff and
mm-hmm.
get the beds rate from all last year's crap. Mm-hmm. Especially if you inherit a new pot that somebody left in bad shape.
Yeah.
So anyway, that is going to happen. But, you know, there is this kind of, it builds, you know, oh, I haven't seen that gardener yet at all this year, you know. And then finally in June, they kind of trundle in with their tomato plants. Okay.
That's what they're doing. Yeah. See you in August. Yeah.
So there's this this sort of bell-shaped curve of early light.
Not only that, but now that it's not plowed every year, which I think stopped.
I guess not quite sure. A while back.
I don't think it was quite a while back.
Steve
only ten.
Williams?
Steve Williams. No, I haven't, but I need to.
It's either Williams or Williams.
Who comes to the?
He comes to the garden meeting.
Yeah.
He's been here the longest that I know.
Yeah.
There may be others. I mean, he probably knows some others, but
I do need to talk to him. Number. Yeah, but there's a temporal dimension to what a gardener who had your plot before you get it has done.
Oh.
Which is really, and that really only comes because of perennials,
it's,
you know?
Stephen Williams. He's in 1021.
1021. Okay.
But
you actually aren't getting a blank slate, whatever that would be, you know, and so how you account for these this temporal dimension over years and years and years, right?
Well, I still have remnants of things from the gardener before me. Plants I've pretty much selected or unselected. but there's still the way they had the place, they must have had some sort of perennial or something in one place. Mm-hmm. Dug an enormous hole. So I came and it was like, what was in here that's this deep? So I put my compost bin over that.
Oh, that's where your compost
so I thought, okay, that would be a thing that I could do that spot. But there's still this drainage issue that kind of occurs because I think they move soil around so that the topsoil is deeper in places than in others, and so the water, you know, goes different. So I'm still working with this, and it's been a long time. And, I don't know.
And you know, about the water,
And there's a bed that, I don't know what they planted in it, but this one section of one bed always has problems. So I don't know whether it had nematodes or some, you know, root fungus, or they planted, you know, or they put in walnut leaves, or, you know, those sort of long-term chemical problems. I don't know. It seems like it's getting better over time, but it's still like I have to think carefully what I might want to put in there, because that might not do as well as...
What do you choose to put in that section? Just hardier potatoes.
And they did really well, so I don't know whether that's I'm getting rid of it or the potatoes, whatever it was.
That's interesting.
Yeah, but it, you know, it was like, I can look back in my records and see that, you know, this bed is always, beans do really badly there. And, you know, I think beans have the nitrogen-fixing symbiote, and I'm wondering if something killed that off in there, you know, the microbial.
There's something in
community is modified somehow, or, and like I said, maybe it had to do with putting in something that left a lasting chemical. I just don't know, but it's not getting better over time. But it's persistent.
Yeah.
It's a problem.
Yeah.
And certainly the people who have had thistle. It goes on. You've got every bit of it out, and it's back again.
Listen, you know that my full plot had huge thistles in it. I mean, so I sort of go and every single day. I pick out the tops that are coming out. You know, so at least,
if you don't,
at least be weak before. No, I mean, at least be weak by the time winter comes. You know, but every day they're like thistle, and some days they're like 3 inches tall. Like, where did you come from? You were here 2 days ago.
I know.
Even
yeah.
if I miss
one
a day,
like that. And it's just
incredible.
This year I only had a few little spots that I had to keep for painting. You know, and the people who come only once a week, this becomes an intractable problem for them. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really feel for them because even if they keep them mowed so that they don't seed, you know, they're just fighting with it all the time. Robin had a lot of problems like this.
Oh, did he before?
I think he still is.
Yeah. Even a good organic farmer will have to struggle with. Nothing you can do. Yeah, so that was, that's just another angle to it that's really fascinating, historical.
I think it's kind of fun. And I did a couple of orientations, and I was trying to tell people, if you get a plot and you aren't really familiar with gardening, grab some experienced gardener to look at your plot. You might have plants that you would like to get.
Don't tear it all up before you dig it up.
Because there are these either self-seeded, you know, lettuce and stuff. A lot of times, if somebody lets lettuce go to seed, that blows around, or you bring it from the compost, and I'll have volunteer lettuce here and there. And then there are these, you know, all these perennial things that you might not recognize when it's this big, and yet it's going to be a flower or an herb or a...
Well, the garlic onions that are like garlic chives, I didn't recognize. I realized that it was something because it was all in a row in my plot. So it's like that it was there, but I had no idea what it was. Yeah. It was really interesting. And I'd never, because it's an Asian. I mean, that's an Asian.
Yeah, and they eat them really young.
Yeah.
They actually mow them regularly.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
So I let mine go because I kind of like the flowers.
The flowers are beautiful.
I eat them in the spring and then I just sort of let them go and let the flowers come in. And the Asian gardens go, you don't like that vegetable? No, I like it fine, but I like the flowers too.
That's good. Yeah, I'll do this. Yeah, competing. Okay, I think I should go. Thank you, Gretel. This is really, I really enjoyed this. This is a good one.
I know you want.